Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Now Bali podcast with me, Eddie Spears. This episode, once again, comes from a feature article in our digital edition, February 2022, in which we share two tragic Balinese love stories from the island's long list of myths and legends. If you haven't had a chance to read the latest issue, you'll find a link for this in the show notes, which you can read online or download the PDF for free. The story I'm sharing with you today was inspired by two events in February, that is Chinese New Year and Valentine's Day. It is the story of the Barong Landung, two common ceremonial effigies or puppets, much like other Barong or the Rangda costumes. Yet, the history of this pair of Barong is tied to themes of not only love, but also Bali's history with China. We see, once again, how folklore is used to explain mundane histories of Bali's past, rooted in some historical fact, but making them more exciting with supernatural occurrences and divine intervention. As always, thanks to Genesis Creative Center for supporting this podcast with their music studio facilities in Brawa, which you can find at inspire@genesis.com or at inspire@genesis on Instagram. Now, on with the show. Found in most banjars across Bali, the distinct appearance of the Barong Landung characters are unmistakable in the assortment of Balinese religious effigies. This conspicuous couple, always found together, are at face value just symbols of an old Balinese love story. However, digging deeper, this historic husband and wife drama speaks not of love, but of identity. It is symbolic of Bali's multi-ethnic and multi-religious history, and ultimately of the centuries-long relationship the island has had with China. Around the Galungan festival, which takes place every 6 months, the Barong Landung pair are brought out in parade. The word Landung is Balinese for tall, aptly describing these puppet figures, towering up to 3 meters when they are worn on the shoulders of the solo carrier or performer. Unlike Bali's other Barong characters, which are zoomorphic, the Barong Landung are anthropomorphic. In other words, display a human rather than an animal appearance. When paraded, the Barong Landung take on the holy role of cleansing and exorcising, just like other Barong. Though in performance and dance, they can be entertaining or educational, a Balinese version of Punch and Judy. With such displays, it is easy to see why their deeper symbolism can go unnoticed. Despite being a pair, one man and one woman, their appearances are distinct from one another. The male figure has a dark complexion, his face is scrunched up and rough, and his teeth protrude. As for his counterpart, the female figure has pearl-white skin, her features are soft, her mouth delicate with scarlet lips, and her eyes are slanted. Though both dressed in regal Balinese attire, their deliberate facial designs present the contrast of halus, or refined, and keras, or rough, a feature in Balinese mask carving to clearly display the stature and nature of a character. Add to that the difference in complexion and the female figure's eyes, it is obvious that this is a multicultural couple. As puppet figures, they are often referred to as Juro Gede, or big man, and Juro Lu, his wife. But who these figures symbolize, why they are such a central part of Balinese ritual today, and what they ultimately represent, is what makes the Barong Landung so interesting. Part 1. A Love Triangle. The history of the Barong Landung is, as is often the case in Bali, shrouded in myth. Histories are told in folkloric fashion, imbued with the supernatural, or perhaps embellished over the centuries through an intergenerational Chinese whispers. The story most backed by recorded chronicles tells of a 12th century king of Bali, Sri Aji Jayapangus. During his reign, a ship from China came to Bali on which traveled a Chinese woman with her father. Her name was Kang Ching Wei. Her face was soft, delicate, and kind, her skin glistening white. King Jayapangus was instantly enamored by the beauty of his visitor, so much so that he asked for her hand in marriage. Now, this was not welcome news to the king's priests, who warned Jayapangus that his betrothed did not share the same religion as him. She was Buddhist, he was Hindu. The gods would not approve of such a matrimony. However, what a king wants, a king gets. Jayapangus and Kang Qingwei were married, making her the Chinese queen of Bali. It seems the priests were right, though. On their wedding day, the sky released the fury of the gods with a torrential rain said to have flooded all of Bali. The king and his new queen found refuge in the highlands, settling down in Kintamani within the Batur caldera. Yet still the gods denied them happiness. Kang Qingwei was unable to bear a child, labeled as barren, lending her the cruel nickname Dewi Mandul. Jayapangus went to pray at Lake Batur to ask for mercy. Instead, he was met by Dewi Danu, the goddess of the lake. The two eloped, an affair of kings and gods, which resulted in the birth of a child, Maya Danawa. For those who recognize the name, Maya Danawa later becomes a central antagonist in many of Bali's later legends, including that of Galungan. Inevitably, the lonesome Chinese queen goes in search for her husband, finding him now with a new family, bearing a son. An epic fight ensues, Kang Qingwei's discovery of Dewi Danu and Dewi Danu's discovery of the king's previous marriage. Things do not bode well for the two-timing king. The ending to this tragic love story has many versions, and the version depends on the desired narrative of the storyteller. Those in support of multiculturalism say that Kang Qingwei allowed the king to keep his second wife, with conditions. These included filing down his canines to show the curbing of his love lust, normalizing the use of the Chinese currency across Bali, and building Chinese temples, or at least shrines, within Balinese temples. This ending helps explain how current rituals came to be, the Balinese matata, tooth filing, the use of Chinese coins or keping in ceremonies, and indeed there are Chinese shrines in Hindu temples across Bali. Now, this ending lends a lot of credit to the Chinese and their influence in Bali, which not everyone is in support of. Religious or even ethnic conservatives accept that some kind of settlement was made between the parties, but the moral of the story focuses more on the queen's inability to bear a child, using this narrative as a deterrent of interfaith or perhaps even inter-ethnic marriages. There is at least a neutral ending, neither for or against, which states that the higher gods punished all three parties for their combined adultery, jealousy, and lack of purity. Jayapangus and Kang Qingwei were thus immortalized as the Barong Landung, a reminder of the consequences of one's actions. Part 2. The Spirit of Baling Kang. Whatever ending one chooses to believe, it does not negate the fact that the Chinese have had a profound effect on Balinese culture, and their historic presence is still witnessed to this day. In Kintamani, one will find Pura Penataran Agung Dalam Balingkang, a temple that pays homage to Jayapangus and Kang Qingwei. It is named after the couple, combining the words Bali, for the king of Bali, and Kang, for Kang Qingwei. So we have Balingkang. A Chinese shrine is found inside this Balinese Hindu temple. This is said to have been the royal couple's place of refuge and is symbolic of the fusion of Hinduism and Buddhism, which is characteristic of the Balinese religion. I quote Victor Gotowick, "Even today, the Balinese refer to the spirit of Balingkang when they want to emphasize that there is tolerance and peace between Buddhists and Hindus on Bali." End quote. Other examples of this Chinese-Balinese cultural fusion exists. More evidence is seen in the use of the Chinese coin, the keping, in Balinese religious rites. A notable ritual is when building a new family or public temple. The coins are buried at the site, Mundum Pedagingan, The makeup of the coins are also imbued into Balinese philosophy. Believed to contain the five elements of metal, Panchadhatu, which symbolize Panchadewata, five key deities. Interestingly, Kang Qingwei herself, in her deified form, is prayed to when worshippers are asking for wealth or prosperity. It was said that during her time as queen, Bali was indeed prosperous and benefited from her Chinese connection. We could also say that the Balinese rice terraces, the zoomorphic Barong figures, are amongst other ancient Chinese influences here on the island. Part 3. The Barong Landung Legacy. Ultimately, without having to justify the origins of rites and rituals, the fact that the Barong Landung puppets continue to be central to Balinese Hindu ceremony shows the acceptance, if not celebration, of a Chinese figure in Chinese history. Thus, these effigies are more than just the Juro Gede Juro Lu puppet show. They are more than the cleansing tools of Galungan. They are more than symbols of an ancient love story. They are symbolic of the multicultural, multi-faith and multi-ethnic tolerance that exists in Balinese Hinduism. To hone this point down, we go to the other origin story of the Barong Landung, the more mythological story not tied to recorded chronicles and edicts. This story shares that the male figure represents a Dravidian from ancient India, hence the darker complexion, and again a Chinese woman. The story follows these characters stuck in a Romeo and Juliet situation, forbidden to love one another, coming from opposite sides of different camps, in this case, Buddhism and Hinduism. So strong was their love that the two fled their homes and searched the world for somewhere they could live in peace together. They landed on Bali, where their Hindu and Buddhist backgrounds merged, and the future generations would be their descendants, shown by the Balinese chocolate skin complexion, a mixture of their white and dark brown skin. Now, whilst this cannot be the literal history of Bali, its symbolism is poignant. This Barong Landung story speaks of a Balinese self-awareness, that their culture is a merging of outside influences, that of India and of China. Victor Gotwick explains, and I quote, "They, the Balinese, come close to so-called post-modern positions. Vis-a-vis India and China, their island is perceived as a third space where cultural influences converge," end quote. In this context, the worship of the Barong Landung puppets is simply ancestral worship, very characteristic to Balinese Hinduism. Juro Gede and Juro Lu are their kawitan, i.e. ancestry. So, beyond the love story origins of Barong Landung, the puppets are symbolic of a historical pluralism. But if we wish to put a romantic spin on all of this, then we can. We can say that Bali was the chosen destination for these rejected lovers who found refuge on this magical island and started a tolerant, accepting society for centuries to come. That love has been immortalized as the Barong Landung puppets that we see today. Now, isn't that a happy ending we can all agree on? Hey, thanks again for listening in to the Now Bali podcast. Don't forget that you can read or download our latest magazine edition for free, filled with more stories on culture, but also on travel, dining, news, opinion, and more, everything about life on the island. Check the show notes for the link and enjoy. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with a friend over social media, or please rate us on your podcast platform to help us grow. Thank you so much. This is Eddie Spears from the Now Bali podcast. I'll see you next time.